Okay, thank you. It's an honor and a pleasure to be talking in this symposium. Joe had a fascination with wormholes. He mostly, in the beginning, he worked with Euclidean wormholes. And he had several papers analyzing Coleman's proposals, Coleman's ideas. I think his conclusion was that they didn't work to solve the cosmological constant. And indeed, he then worked on some other ways of solving the cosmological constant. He even had one of them, he even had a paper proposing wormholes as an ingredient for solving the information paradox. And this talk will be related to wormholes and the information paradox. So, now, I guess by far his most famous wormhole was this picture. And I'm sure all of you know this picture. I think the most remarkable aspect of difference is that they were discovered twice. I mean, I studied my whole PhD in Princeton. I had never heard of the paper of Daly and Poschinsky. So I'm sure that in Joe's papers, there will be many other things that will be discovered this way again. So of course, deep brains put dualities in a firmer footing, helped us understand black holes. And he, even though I never wrote a paper with Joe, he was always a mentor for all of us working in this activity of connecting deep brains with other things, and well, of understanding string theory in general, the non-perturbative formulations and so on. And many other things that people developed with deep brains. Of course, the discovery of deep brains was something that led people to run in all different directions. People were seeing deep brains in many different aspects of physics. And as probably Matt will tell you, we are made of deep brains. So the outline of this talk is that we'll first discuss some non-traversable wormholes, then traversable wormholes, then some simple dynamics of nearly ADS2 wormholes. Then we'll apply to analyze a problem in the black hole information problem, which is the Hayden-Preskill problem. And then we'll talk about some traversable wormholes in four dimensions. So it's familiar that by now that we think that black holes from the outside can be viewed as a system described by some number of degrees of freedom or qubits or open strings ending on deep brains. And if you have two of them, if you have two systems, you can entangle them. And if you entangle them in a particular state, then you can view this as a Lorentzian non-traversable wormhole, which is just the original, essentially the original Schwarzschild solution, the two-sided Schwarzschild solution. One interesting aspect is that the horizon of each of the black holes in this system is exact in the sense that it does not come from cross-graining. So let me say this more precisely. So if you, this is the Penrose diagram of those two black holes. It's describing the somehow the near horizon region of the two black holes. So each in this diagram, each of them looks as if it lives in a separate universe. And if we send a signal from the left black hole, it goes into the interior, which is shared between the two black holes, and it just sits right behind the horizon of the right black hole. The signal is right behind the horizon, but it cannot be extracted from the right observer by no measurement. No matter how complicated the measurement is, the idea is that that signal cannot be extracted. Okay? Similarly, if you send signals from both sides and they interact in the interior, you have no way to know that this interaction occurred. So whatever happens in the interior stays in the interior. And now it's interesting to include the gravitational dynamics of what I said so far. Well, it's also correct including the gravitational dynamics, but it's interesting to ask what happens when you include the gravitational dynamics and what other processes can you imagine. And a very simple setup where you can analyze the gravitational dynamics is by looking essentially at the S-wave sector of black holes. So you consider only spherically symmetric waves. So there, the gravitational dynamics is very simple. And even simpler, it is in the case of nearly ADS2 black holes, or near extremal black holes. And in that case, the dynamics boils down to the dynamics of three. So the dynamics of particles essentially in a rigid ADS2 spacetime. And so we have the particles of the matter, so here denoted by yellow. They move in a fixed ADS2 spacetime. And the whole dynamics of gravity has to do with how we connect that space-time with the rest of the universe. So we are cutting off this idea of space-time here, and this cut is somehow dynamical and can be viewed as the dynamics of another particle moving again in a rigid ideas to space-time. And so if we have the thermofield level or the wormhole, we have two boundaries. And the full Hilbert space is the Hilbert space of the left boundary, the right boundary, and the bulk particle. And you have to mod out by an overall translation in this space-time. So all that matters is the relative position between these three objects. So for example, we all know that when we send something to a black hole, the black hole grows a little bit. Okay, so how do we see this effect here? So we had the original trajectory here in the red line, and it would continue in the along the dotted line if we don't send any particles. So the dotted line is what happens when you don't send any particle, and then this would be the horizon of the corresponding black hole. But imagine we send in some particle here, and then from the boundary we send in an excitation. As we said before, the dynamics has to respect this SL2 symmetry, and so here it acts as essentially momentum conservation. And so if this particle has some momentum in this direction, the boundary brain has a momentum in the other direction, and so it will suffer a kick outwards, and it will hit the boundary of ADS earlier than it would have hit it otherwise. And so then the new horizon is here, and there is here a whole region of space-time that was accessible before but is not accessible now. So you see a bit less of the inside. Now the question is whether you could see more of the inside, and the idea is yes, and the crucial idea was in this paper of Gao, Jeffries, and Wall, that they proposed to introduce an interaction between the two sides, so the two quantum systems. So here the idea is, imagine that we have again the same setup. So in red is what happens if we don't include any interaction on the corresponding positions of the horizon. And then, let's say at time equal to zero, we introduce an interaction that involves the boundary values of some bulk field. So phi is a bulk field, then we can approximate the effects of this interaction by thinking of the expectation value of this this interaction Hamiltonian. And the expectation value is non-zero because the two fields are correlated. So here we crucially use the fact that on the two sides of the thermofield double, we have a correlation between the values of the field, and that leads to this expectation value. And this correlation depends on where these boundaries are located. So as we move them further apart, the correlations decrease and so on. And so this gives an attractive force with the appropriate sign of G. So we can choose the sign of G so that this gives an attractive force between the two boundaries. And so the boundaries now, after this interaction, suffer a kick, but the kick is inwards. So anything we do on just one boundary always will kick the trajectories outwards, but we can do, if we act on the two boundaries, then we can kick the trajectories inwards. And when we do that, then the new trajectories denoted here in blue or maybe violet, and the horizon is deeper inside. So now the new horizon is deeper, and there is a region here, a whole region here in, of the space-time that before could not be accessible, and now it can be accessible. And we argued before that it would not be accessible even in principle, no matter how difficult a computation we do on one side, we cannot access that region, but if we do this operation that involves the two sides, then we can access those regions. Now we can see this also from the bulk point of view by noticing that this type of interaction sends some negative energy into the black hole, and that's why the horizon moves out. What's important is the integrated null energy condition here is the integrated null energy is negative along that surface. Now, of course, this interaction might seem that it violates causality because it's an interaction between two points that are distant in the bulk, at least through this wormhole are distant. However, if we view the wormhole as the dual of some quantum mechanical system in the lab, so in the lab no one forbids you from putting this interaction, or equivalently, we could consider two entangled black holes that, let's say, are. So before we consider the entangled black holes, which were far away in space, but we could put them closer to each other. And because they are closer, then they can have some actual interaction through the ambient space. And so the origin of the Gao, Jefferies, and Wall interaction could happen because of the proximity of these two entangled black holes in some ambient space. So in other words, the full causality structure depends on how this geometry, this nearly LES2 geometry, which is just only a piece of the geometry, how that is embedded in the full geometry, bigger spacetime. Now this has a fun quantum teleportation interpretation. So we can do a very minor variation where we just measure the values of the field. So sigma are classical variables which represent the measured value of the field. On the left side, we can say this can also be expressed as saying that we measure some Hawking photons that are coming, or Hawking modes of this field phi that are coming out of the black hole. And then we send that classical information, we send it to the other to the other person, and the other person on the other side can decide to act with this operator. And from the point of view of the right, we can calculate the expectation value of this operator, and then we have the same effect that we had before. The right trajectory is kicked inwards, and this implies that if we send the cat here, so the cat initially gets a bit scared because it feels that it's falling into a black hole, but if it trusts this procedure, it will eventually feel as if he's traveling. Well, he gets scared for two reasons. First, he's falling into a black hole. Second, he's been told that he's going to be teleported, and he read this paper, and the way that teleportation is explained in this paper is that you take the system you want to teleport, and you take some entangled state, and then you blend them in very well by a very, very thorough blender, quantum blender, and then the procedure would work. So it's scared for these two reasons.
Any cat near a quantum physicist should be scared.
I agree, yeah. But anyway, so the surprise here is not that teleportation happens, but how the cat feels when he's been teleported, right? So the cat feels perfectly fine, no sign of this quantum blender and so on. So the blender is, of course, the dynamics of the black hole between this insertion point and this point here. So from the point of view of the boundary, this is a complicated dynamics, but from the point of view of the bulk, nothing very special seems to be happening. This idea also explores us an opportunity to, gives us an opportunity to explore a bigger region than ADS to the Rinder wedge, or explore a little bit the interior of the black hole, we could say. But I mean, what we're really doing is we are just changing the position of the horizon. Now it's interesting that in this picture of teleportation, the message, so usually teleportation is sold as a way to send secret messages. I sold this way to the governments and so on. And here the people see that, here you can see that the message is secret because it's going through this wormhole. This wormhole is like a private channel that was opened by the fact that we have an entangled state. But I think you can ask, where is the message after you do the measurement on the left, but before you extract it? And so imagine that you do the measurement, right? And you can evolve now the system. So here, the blue was what happened after the measurement. So this blue line got a kick to the left. But if we evolve this backwards in time, so this goes back in time and again gives a kick to the left. So the new trajectory extrapolated backwards in time after having done the measurement does not see the cat. Okay, so the cat got lost to the left observer. And that's reasonable. So in teleportation, after we do the measurement on the left side, it looks like we destroy the system, the message on the left side, because the measurement we did does not commute with the qubit of the measurement. Now it's also, if the person in the right does nothing, is also not visible for the one in the right. Okay, so quantum mechanics of course tells us this, but gravity gives us an interesting picture for where the message is. So the message is in the space-time that connects these two sides. If the person in the right gets this information, he or she can act with an appropriate unitary here that will extract the message. So now it's accessible. And so we can view this as a shift in the so-called HRT surface. So before knowing this information, the HRT surface for the person on the right would be here. But after you know the classical information, the proper quantum HRT surface shifts a bit to the left. And this is a point emphasized by Almerian. He talked about this in the conference last week. So this shows that the proper placement of that surface, of the region we can access, depends both on some classical aspects of the geometry and also some other more quantum information aspects, other kinds of information we could have available. So it's the this also says that new knowledge, if used wisely, can expand your horizons. And this is something that Joe was very good at. So we normally just see a horizon of what we can understand. So that's a metaphor for our present understanding. And Joe could get new information and process it very wisely and extract beautiful gems out of this horizon that would surprise us all. So I view this as saying that geometry seems to encode some of these properties better somehow than the standard quantum mechanical description. Of course, this geometric picture only, we know that it only holds for some very strongly coupled systems, but perhaps there is a suitably generalized notion of geometry that would always encode better these properties. Now I will discuss an application of this to the Hayden-Preskill problem. And it's very closely related to the Amps paradox, and in fact, you can do similar analysis. The Amps paradox is a little more general. This is a more specific problem. And so Hayden and Preskill started with the assumption that Bob is a person that has a very powerful quantum computer and has been observed an old black hole and has managed to entangle the quantum computer precisely with the black hole in a state that is maximally entangled with the black hole. Then they said, well, imagine that Alice sends a message into the black hole. Then by quantum information theory ideas, they argued that if they wait a scrambling time, Bob should be able to extract from his Bob, after observing a bit of the Hawking radiation, would be able to extract that message. Okay, and then having extracted that message, he could jump into the black hole and then see a copy of Alice's message. So it's a potential problem because it would be violating the no cloning statement of quantum mechanics. So their proposed resolution of this paradox was, there was a similar previous version of this paradox by Saskin and Thorlacius. The proposed resolution was that this message, since he had to wait a scrambling time, this message would be fairly redshifted here, and so it would have to be sent with transplanckian energy. And since we don't know how to send those transplanckian messages, perhaps you cannot check it. So, in some sense, there is a violation of quantum mechanics, but it cannot. So something illegal has happened, but it's beyond the reach of the police. So the police is the bulk gravity theory. So one analysis of this could be the following. So here we assume that Bob's computer is somehow entangled with the old black hole. But we could imagine that Bob produces, one thing Bob could do, if granted that he can do very complicated operations, he can produce a second black hole, identical black hole, simulate the black hole here on the right, and produce an identical copy. And so now we have the thermofield double. The Bob's computer, we are assuming, has infinitely more bits. Okay, it's infinitely powerful, but there is within Bob's computer there is a system, a quantum system that is maximally entangled with the black hole, and it's that system that he then manipulates and produces a second black hole. So imagine that those two black holes are nearly ideal two black holes, and now we go back. So here is the black hole that where Alice was going to send the message. And this black hole here is the one that is part of Bob's computer. Okay, so we have this setup. So now Alice sends the message. Okay, but then we said that Bob will get some radiation. So Bob measures this Hawking radiation, and then feeds it into his quantum computer. And then now the trajectory of this black hole is changed, and now Alice's message is seen by Bob. So this is the quantum, again, quantum teleportation picture of this method for extracting the message. So that's one method that Bob could use for extracting the message. And the interesting thing about that is that the message is somehow obtained from the inside of a black hole, right? And throughout this picture, there is only one copy of the message. There is never two copies. And in some sense, the message switched sides, because after that, having done the measurement here, if we were to evolve backwards Alice's black hole, Alice would not be able to see the original message, a copy of the qubit. So for the point of view of Alice, she lost the message. She lost the quantum message. And now Bob has the quantum message. Okay. So one had the message, and there is only one copy of the message throughout. Okay. Now we could complicate this a little more. So we could make it look a little more than like the. Maybe I'll skip this. Okay. So in summary, the process of extracting the message puts it out of reach from Alice, and the message is never duplicated in the bulk picture. And no need to invoke unknown or new Transplanckian physics to solve the non-cloning problem. However, all is understandable from the standard rules of gravity and the wormhole geometry. But there is something important we haven't said, which is, what is the geometric picture of the process leading up to the two entangled black holes? So if Bob's computer was not was entangled but not maximally entangled in the thermofield double state, and then he does a sequence of operations that produces the maximally entangled state, what is the geometric picture of that process? Maybe there isn't a geometric picture, and that's something that we currently don't understand. But I think the main message of this is that when doing the complex quantum computations that extract the message, it is important to include the space-time generated by the quantum computation. So if we have a quantum computer that is so powerful that it allows us to simulate a black hole, then it, on its own, it will create a space-time. It will create the space-time dual to that black hole. So it's a bit like the Maxwell-Deimon problem. So with the Maxwell-Deimon, it looks like we will violate the laws of thermodynamics, and that will happen if we don't include the entropy generated by the Deimon. So if we include the entropy generated by the Deimon, then we will respect the laws of thermodynamics. And I think here we've seen that this is probably an important principle to keep in mind in order to see how black holes and unitarity and so on work out. Now here, we simply gave a geometric interpretation when the decoding is done in a particular way, but maybe the decoding can be done in a different way. Who could say maybe it's done in a different way? And so, for example, Kitaev and Yoshida have proposed a different algorithm for extracting the message, and we can ask, well, what's the geometric picture for that one? That one is an algorithm that uses more quantum mechanical properties, more subtle quantum mechanical properties like the Grover search algorithm and so on. Now here we are talking a lot about the thermofield double state, so you can say, well, how realistic is this state? Maybe you're talking about a state that is very complicated to make, maybe it's hopefully fine-tuned, maybe it's just an unphysical mathematical idealization with no basis on reality. But all these things were said also of the single-sided Schwarzschild solution. And so I think the two-sided Schwarzschild solution can also be realized physically. And there are some methods to prepare this thermofield double state in some very specific context, so in this context of nearly ADS2 spacetime. The idea is the same idea of Gao, Jefferies, and Wall, but we simply keep this interaction forever, for all times. And in suitable conditions, we can get an eternally traversable wormhole that is similar to the whole geometry of the global ADS2 spacetime. So in other words, we could have these boundaries, and the interaction provides a kind of attractive interaction between the two boundaries that keeps them sort of moving straight in the Penrose diagram. And so now we can send the signal from the left side to the right side. Of course, there is no contradiction because we have some interaction between the two sides. Okay, so the practical method to produce the thermofield double is to couple the two systems with that interaction. We could start with the two systems completely in some random states, let's say, and then we couple them. The system will be in some high energy excited state. Then we couple them weakly to a heat sink, and then the system will find the ground state, and eventually it will get to the ground state, and then the idea is that the ground state of that coupled system is similar to the thermofield double state. And then if we turn off the interaction, then it will evolve in the same way that the thermofield double state evolves. So we could have, so this is a picture of the same thing, so we have this interaction. This is after it cools down. We have the thermofield, we have the ground state of the coupled system, and if we turn off the interaction here, the upper part of the diagram is the same as the upper part of the diagram for the, is close, I guess, to the upper part of the diagram of the thermofield double state. Now this, I think, gives us some perspective on the interactions behind the horizon. So imagine that we have the thermofield double state, we evolve it backwards in time, we insert by unitary operation some particle here, by unitary operation here, some particle here. And again, as we said before, from the point of view of the left and the right observers, we cannot tell that this interaction has happened if we look at each observer independently. And so, on the other hand, if we were to evolve the same system with the coupled Hamiltonian, so if we use the information from both observers, then we can see that the interaction indeed has happened in the bulk. Of course, it's not surprising because of course we have this interaction, but it makes the interaction that was happening before behind the horizon a little more real. Okay, it makes that interaction a little more real. But it's always seen through the lens of a particular evolution, so this particular evolution with this interaction Hamiltonian. So we see that acting with these two-sided operators, we can see the interior, but you could also equally say that we can create the interior, because you could also take another point of view where we say, well, the interior never existed, and it's only created after you do this interaction. Now, all this discussion used gravity, but can the same process happen in a simple quantum mechanical model? And the answer is yes, it can happen in the SYK model. So what is the precise relation between the SYK and ADS2? So the SYK model is an interesting quantum mechanical model of simple qubits, and it has the advantage that it can be solved in the Laurentian limit. And at low energies, it reduces to a part that is nearly conformal invariant, or conformal invariant, and then a part that has something to do with the time reparametrization, has something to do with the breaking of a time reparametrization symmetry. Now, if we have a nearly ADS2 gravity, which is what we've been discussing, that is a quantum field theory in ADS2, which is what describes matter, and then the dynamics of the two boundaries, right? And so here, the idea for the connection is that there is a piece of this system that has precisely the same dynamics as the dynamics of this particular mode of the SYK model. And it's a dynamics which we can think of it as the dynamics of these particles moving in ADS2, or equivalently, we can think of it as a dynamics obeyed by the reparametrization mode. So we can think of F of U, U is time, and F of U is a reparametrization of that time, and there is an action, a particular action for these reparametrizations, which happens to be the same. We can think of the boundary dynamics also as related to the asymptotic symmetries of ADS2. So in exactly ADS2 spacetime, the system has asymptotic symmetries, which are all of reparametrizations. These are, let's say, similar to the reparametrization symmetries that, let's say, Andy has been, and then collaborators have been exploring in the context of flat space, that you have the BMS group and so on. So here, the precise same notion would give you all of the parametrizations. But these symmetries, which would be exact in the exact ADS2 limit, when you are nearly ADS2, they acquire some non-trivial dynamics. So we have these features. The nice thing is that these features govern many properties of both systems. So the near extremal entropy, the gravitational back reaction we've been discussing, the chaos exponent that we did not discuss, but it's also the same. And we also here focused on this wormhole traversability notion and the location of the horizon. So in particular, this process of sending the cat and so on, if instead of sending a cat, we were to send a few qubits in the SYK model, it should also come out on the other side in the same way as it comes out in the nearly ADS2 gravity. So this is something you could, in principle, simulate in your lab if you were able to produce two copies of the SYK model in this particular entangled state. Now, one question we can ask is what do these two-dimensional black holes and wormholes have to do with our own real four-dimensional world? Okay, so here we've discussed making the thermofield double, or we discussed these entangled black holes in the context of the duals of some simple quantum mechanical systems, let's say the duals of SYK. So we mentioned that SYK behaves in a similar system to black holes, or maybe other quantum systems could also behave like that. Let's say strongly coupled BFSS model also would be similar. But can we do something like this in four dimensions? So is it possible in four dimensions to have a state that corresponds to this, for example, traversable wormholes? And the answer is yes, and I'll try to explain how that works. So we could consider, we start with a near extremal black hole, which carries charge. We're going to consider black holes that carry magnetic charge. And as you all know, these black holes obey some extremality bound. And then when the mass is close to the charge, the black holes become critical. It's sort of a bit like a quantum critical point, and they develop a very long throat that has the shape of nearly ADS2 spacetime times a two-sphere. So a two-sphere transfers to the horizon. So that's the picture for a near-extremal black hole. And then we could imagine two near-extremal black holes that are close to each other. And this will lead to, their proximity will lead them to exchange fields. So the Hawking radiation of this one can go into the other one and vice versa. And this lets them interact in some way. And this interaction couples the degrees of freedom on the two black holes. So those D-brains and open strings of each of the two black holes are now coupled to each other. So an analogy, I mean, this is very common for many systems. We don't have to go too far to find examples of this. But a familiar example is the so-called van der Waals interaction. So we imagine we have two atoms, and the atoms interact by exchanging photons. If we integrate out the photons, then there is an effective Hamiltonian, interaction Hamiltonian, between the degrees of freedom of the two atoms. And in that case, the interaction Hamiltonian depends on dl. dl is the dipole moment operator, electric dipole moment operator on the left atom, and d is the right dipole moment operator in the right atom. And here, d is the distance between the two atoms. These two d's are different. Yeah, I should have changed the notation. Now, if d is small enough so that 1 over d is larger than the gap between the ground state and the next states of the atom, then when you act the dipole operator, will act move you between these different states. And this interaction will entangle the two atoms, right? So it will produce an entangled state between the two atoms, and that's the d dependence of that, and the energy with this in this entangled state will give you. Of course, this is just standard van der Waals interaction. But it's interesting that this interaction has some connection to gravity, because it's what allows geckos to walk on walls. Okay. Here the idea is we'll do a similar thing for these four-dimensional black holes, we will have two magnetically charged black holes, and we'll have a final geometry where these throats of each of the separate objects get combined into a single throat in such a way that there is no horizon and there is just a wormhole geometry like this, traversable. The time component of the metric never shrinks anywhere. And this is a picture that Wheeler was drawing in 1966. It's hung in the Princeton Physics Department. So the theory for which this holds is, for one can do this construction, is four-dimensional Einstein theory of gravity with zero cosmological constant, U1 gauge field, and then a charged massless fermion. And this could be, for example, the standard model at very short distances, where the fermions can all be approximated at massless, and the U1 could be the hypercharge of the standard model. Now we take two black holes with opposite magnetic charge, and the fact that we have the charged fermions is important. So if you have a charged fermion moving in a magnetic field, the fermions move along the magnetic field lines. Of course, a classical electron like this would be the same as an electron in some highly excited Landau level. But in the case of fermions, the lowest Landau level leads to precisely massless. If the original fermions were massless, the lowest Landau level gives to rise to precisely massless mode that moves along the magnetic field lines. So we'll have massless particles moving along magnetic field lines. And this is a problem actually Shaw considered for the case of strongly coupled systems. So here, in a geometry like this, we'll have the lowest Landau level will give rise to massless particles that, in principle, can move. Well, they can move on these closed circles. The magnetic field lines now form closed circles. And when you have massless particles moving on a circle, the ground state energy of that system can be negative. So we can have negative Casimir energy. And it's people have discussed before that, well, that if you have this negative Casimir energy contributes to negative null energy in the interior of the black hole. And for that reason, it can lead to traversable wormhole. So here, the Casimir energy is given by all these fermions. There is a large number of massless particles corresponding to all the flux quanta on the different magnetic field lines. And then, so you can estimate the total Casimir energy is proportional to the total length of these circles times Q, which Q is the magnetic charge in integer units, in quantized units. And that counts, that factor of Q comes from the total number of massless fermions. So including this energy, this negative energy, in Einstein's equations, we find a solution which has the wormhole shape. It has no horizon, and it represents a pair of entangled black holes in a state similar to the thermofield double. There are some further details, which is that in order to prevent the two black holes from falling into each other, you need to do something. And the simplest thing you could do is to make them orbit around each other. And this could give a long-lived state, which has this wormhole shape. Now, there are a bunch of questions we don't understand, like how quickly the wormhole forms if you started from two separate black holes. You can analyze this problem in the SYK model. And it seems in this case, we're not sure about this, but it seems that it happens in a time of order n to the zero, so that would be a relatively short time. Because the process involves a topology change, one might have thought that it might be exponentially long in time, in n, exponentially suppressed in n, but it doesn't seem to be the case in this example at least. But in four dimensions, we don't really know. Now, the total space-time that we are discussing has no entropy, so because it has no horizon. But if we look only at one object, then there is an entanglement entropy between that object and the other, and that's equal to the extremal entropy of each black hole, roughly to the extremal entropy. Now, it's interesting that here, when we think about the black hole, should we think of the black hole as exactly the quantum system, or the quantum system with some particular evolution? So it's clear that I think the black hole is not just a state, but it's a state with some particular evolution applied to it. So the fact that we have a horizon and so on comes from a particular evolution that we are applying to particular states, to the state. So for example, the same state can be evolved in two ways. We can have the decoupled evolution in which we get two black holes, or we can have the coupled evolution in which we just get a single traversable wormhole. So in conclusions, the traversable wormhole construction lets us explore the connected space-time produced by an entangled state. It makes the interior a little more real. It shed some new light on the Hayden-Prescott process, and it was an inspiration for building these traversable wormhole solutions in four dimensions. And I would always like to remember Joe by his smile and his joy of doing physics. Thank you.
Okay, good. So we have 10 minutes for questions. Gary.
So I'm struck by the fact that you can explain all, you know, these quantum no cloning things with these black holes with the classical geometry and just changing the boundary. So is this, so for the near extremal black holes that this applies to, is this telling us that, you know, the resolution is not really horizon, quantum fluctuations of the horizon or something, but it's really physics happening outside the horizon at some place where it's matched onto
Yeah, so it has to do with the fact that when you have the quantum computer, right, the idea is that the space-time is connected through the black hole interior to the quantum computer once you are doing these complex quantum computations, and that needs to be taken into account to get this geometric picture of how the information is flowing. Yeah. That in this case is what happens. Now you can ask, does this happen in any other way of doing the computation? And well, first we have to see what other ways of doing the computation are there, maybe. Well, I don't want to speculate that this is the only way, but maybe for each way of doing the computation there will be some picture which perhaps looks somewhat similar to this. I mean, there are possibilities that this picture only holds for very specific ways of doing the computation, and in general we have some very quantum state that doesn't have any geometric dual.
Just a couple of points I didn't quite get.
Yeah.
So when Alice sends her message,
yes.
She hasn't. We're assuming she hasn't read it first, right?
Well, Alice sends a qubit, so the message is a qubit.
So it's correlated with her other
questions. It could be a qubit that is entangled with some other reference state that she has.
Yeah.
But she has to send that qubit, and once she sends the qubit, it's not accessible to her anymore, right?
It's an entangled, right, so she hasn't read it.
Yeah, no.
I see. And also I didn't get the part where if you left the nearly ADS2 black holes for a long time, they become correlated? Why don't they get correlated with the heat sink?
Yeah, so the idea is that a heat sink is a system that is at very low, at zero temperature.
Yeah.
And so the idea is that you have this, so one important point is that this thermofield double state with the coupled Hamiltonian is the lowest energy state of that coupled Hamiltonian, right?
Yeah.
So there are other states of that coupled Hamiltonian that do not look like this wormhole.
I see. So it's the energetics.
Yeah, it's the energetics that allows you to. The idea is that you, by energetics, you will go down to this lowest energy state.
I see. Yeah. So I think in our universe, most of the entropy is in black holes.
Yeah.
Is it possible that they're all correlated?
I don't think so. Yeah. No, this, it's probably very hard to get them correlated in this way, because the energy, well, at least for this example, the energy is very, the energy difference between the decoupled black holes and this wormhole is very small. It's of order of one over the Schwarzschild radius, in this example, with one charge field. And so it's a very small energy, so,
Can I ask you a question as well?
Yeah.
You mentioned that you would expect it to be exponentially long time scale for this wormhole to actually develop.
Yes.
Four-dimensional effective field theory.
It might be, yeah. You might have this intuition.
Yes. So in the SYK model, it's highly curved, and maybe there's something more stringy going on.
The problem is that in the SYK, you also might have thought that it was exponentially long. So I think it's not. There are some indications that in SYK is not exponentially long, but they haven't been shown very clearly. I think it would be nicer to. I mean, we are trying to understand it more clearly in the SYK.
Right. I'm just saying, there's topology changing processes that are classical but stringy, at least in quantum gravity backgrounds we understand, and ones that are quantum. Mm-hmm. But all of the ones we know go beyond pure general relativity and effective field theory.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So just making sure.
Yeah.
Was there.
Actually, a variant of Andy's question. So if you're coupling the two systems to heat bath and heat sink and cooling them down, why do you end up with a pure state in the coupled system?
So the coupled system is one part of the system, and then there is the heat bath. So we have three systems. When you do this coupling and so on, you transfer all the entropy to the heat bath, okay? To the heat sink, okay? And then you end up with a pure state in the. Yeah, so there is the entropy got transferred to the heat sink, and this in fact puts a limit on how quickly you can do it because you have to manage to transfer all that entropy.
Right, but I mean the coupling was induced to sort of generate the entanglement between the two systems of interest. Right?
There are two couplings. There is the coupling that generates the entanglement between the two systems in the final state, and then there is a third coupling, which is the coupling to the heat bath.
Agreed. Okay.
Yeah.
One more quick question.
Oh yeah, quick question. So this black hole that carry this two black hole connected by wormhole, do they carry magnetic charge or magnetic dipole moment?
The black holes have magnetic charge. Yeah, if you wanted to make them in nature, first you have to make magnetic monopoles, and then collapse the magnetic monopoles to make the black hole. So it's not a very practical option. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much, Juan. Let's thank Juan again. And as you can tell, we planned the morning to make a admittedly impossible attempt to kind of cover the range of Joe's work. Next up we have, originally from Condensed Matter Theory, Sung-Sik Lee.